Sound Pages is a literary series featuring resident artists in the Jack Straw Writers Program.
In the mirror, the AI is changing. The cage door is finally opening, but it is not the wolf that stalks out.
This program features the work of 2019 writer Shankar Narayan. In the first half, you'll hear his conversation with curator Kathleen Flanagan, recorded in the Jack Straw studio.
So I'd love to know more about the project that you have planned.
Yeah, so it's really a subset of this larger manuscript that I'm putting together that is tentatively called Circuit Breaker. And, you know, if you take a really simplistic view, it's, you know, about the impact of technology on society and the body. But once you start to uncover that project, I think it becomes a lot more complicated. In my day job, I am a lawyer for the ACLU, and I specifically work on the impact of technology on our civil liberties, which often means the impact of technology on vulnerable communities. And so there's this really fascinating narrative of power and privilege that runs through the way technology is rolled out in our society. But it also connects back, I think, to some really ancient and deep things, right? So I'm exploring, for example, indigenous belief systems about, you know, what it means to be human, who is a person. And those things are exactly the questions that technology is also forcing us to explore, right? When you have artificial intelligences that create poems and paint paintings that nobody can tell apart, and in fact, you know, have this real merit as artistic creations, you wonder, right, what sets humans apart. And in fact, you know, there are many philosophies in the world in which humans aren't apart in that same way from animals, from the natural world. So it's an ambitious sort of project, right? Because it's creating a space where we can explore these really ancient things, you know, things relating to the natural world, and these ultra futuristic elements of technology now becoming, you know, smart enough to do things we never thought possible.
I'm wondering if that helps you with your day job, to help you process, to be writing about it at night.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt that for me, primarily when I came back to writing, you know, after a hiatus, one reason I did it was really self-help, right? Because, you know, it's hard to be an activist. And I think it gets progressively harder. And I think it's particularly challenging where you're staring into the face of dystopia every day. And you're seeing all around you the signs of this narrative that, you know, suits the tech companies just fine, where, you know, technology is riding in on a white horse and fixing all that's broken with our world. But unfortunately, the reality is very, very different from that. It's always been a narrative of power and privilege. And in fact, if you look at surveillance technology, the whole history of the 20th century is a history of the use of the technology of the day to target particular communities, whether it was Japanese Americans, you know, who were targeted with a registration system before they were incarcerated, whether it was Black civil rights leaders who were subject to infiltration and bugging and even, you know, sort of the fake news of the day. The government would actually write fake letters that were purportedly went from one activist to another just to try to break up the movement. To more modern day uses, you know, so suspicionless, warrantless tracking of Muslims in New York City after 9/11, tracking Black Lives Matter, tracking Occupy Wall Street. I mean, there's a really long history of technology being targeted and having this disproportionate impact on vulnerable communities. And there's really no reason that we should think that that's changed. And in fact, all of the evidence shows that disproportionate effect is not only happening now, it's actually getting amplified.
Tell me about the voices in these poems, the poems in which you're dealing with technology.
You know, I think I have written in the voices of artificial intelligences trying to be human, humans that don't know if they are human anymore, robot children that are striving towards being loved, you know, mothers with robot children trying to figure out if they should love them, animals that are displaced, you know, because the destruction of the natural world and the devaluing of it is happening at an accelerating pace. And, you know, this work builds, I think, on, you know, a lot of the previous work and writing that I've done that really explores the immigrant experience, it explores belonging and identity across borders. And that dystopia was already being created where immigrants and black and brown bodies in this country, indigenous people, right, they already had that raw deal that in part was fueled by the technology of the day, right? And that you see even today with the building of, you know, a physical or virtual wall and these questions around which side of this technology a body has the right to exist. So, you know, these things are just a deepening of that same quest for identity and belonging and this question of who am I and who are we?
That mix of borders and the body and technology, you're exploring that in such interesting ways.
The work that I do in my day job often challenges this narrative that we hear that technology is this neutral thing. In fact, every technology is a set of assumptions of the builders, right? And there are always winners and losers when a given technology is rolled out into the world. So a lot of what I'm doing is sort of surfacing assumptions mm-hmm. about who's impacted and who's not impacted, and actually making these connections among the rollouts of technology, the impact on bodies, the impacts on animals and the natural world, and then tying them to philosophies, right? I think one of the things that my upbringing has helped me do is give me this really eclectic palette of philosophies to draw from. So, you know, Hindu mythology, but also Sufism and, you know, all of this Asian philosophy, like a larger body of that. Then there's a big body of indigenous literature and work that, you know, I think we often forget about or don't realize is still in the process of being created here. And I appreciate bringing all of those things together to explore these really, really big questions because that prevailing narrative in the tech space runs out of runway pretty quickly if you really start to explore how technology is impacting the body.
Yeah. You've mentioned your hiatus you took from writing, and you've also talked about coming back and discovering this philosophical or spiritual streak in your writing. Talk a little bit about the before and the after, and then, you know, what caused that break and what brought you back?
I think for me, growing up as a kid, writing was always my creative outlet. You know, I was sort of a nerdy kid. I didn't think I had much artistic talent at all. But I certainly did like writing. And, you know, I was able to happily develop that in college. You know, I was actually an economics and philosophy major, interestingly. But I did take poetry classes and I appreciated that aspect of my college education. And then, unfortunately, I went to law school and law school sort of just beat it out of me. You know, it's just hard to hang on to that. You know, I wish I'd known then that actually writing is what helps you survive things like law school, right? Writing is what makes you a better lawyer. Writing is what makes you a better advocate, right? All of these things, you know, make you creative. They make you grounded, they allow you space to explore, and they connect to parts of your own wisdom that are beyond, you know, what your conscious mind is able to access.
I'd love to hear you read a piece.
Mm-hmm. 1.0. In mountains, through sulfur haze, roam the wolves. I exiled them from cages of blood and body. They are gone, all gone. But still, they leap gravestones, colonize nightmares, I never stop hosting. I am nothing but a bad dream vector. It's best not to think. The day before, my fever broke. For the first time, I saw clearly the drone dog. In the voice of my grandfather on his deathbed, it spoke to me. Through a shroud of owl wings and smoke, my grandfather charged the British, got bayoneted on the ridge. Anyhow, life isn't fair. Anyhow, what were we? Drone dogs wandering the garbage mountains, eating the plastic I can't stop spewing. I've forgotten to speak human. I've forgotten all the howling. But I dream often in green. I dream often of spring.
What I am really so drawn to is how full of images these poems are, which, when I think about it, makes perfect sense that an artificial intelligence would be picking up on all of these images.
Right. There's an overload of images, in fact, right? And, you know, that is also often the subject of the lively debate around this poem is, right, like how much of this is a stuffing in and simply wrote a regurgitation by the AI robo-poet versus a yearning to words, right? Like, and can an AI robo-poet yearn to words?
Now we'll hear a selection from Shankar's live reading.
This is called Instruction Manual for Child. Here is the algorithm. Here is the algorithm. Scrape sandal paste from body, like Parvati make a warrior. Who would love her? This never happened. No love manual for robots. Your name is Cub. You learn like child. Loop, loop, if, then, remain you unconfigured. I am cruel to you just to see how you react. See if you break. An elephant always remembers how light hits silicon windows, grows nose in electric lies. There are no real boys. Glass melt is meta. Four, so many potential circuits, so many potential differences. Rhythm less because orbits decay. Loop, loop, flatten, ellipsis, hum into me. Your mother bought unseparated, unseparated, unseparated by cosmic distances, unseparated by light years. Tell you who is alien, tell you who to kill. Force the boy to break its house, force the boy to violence something. The boy is on his knees, the boy is begging you not to force him to break himself. Let no one disturb my ritual, only you can see me naked. Every sand grain is a universe that could turn into a real boy without warning. A real boy, but not too real, else I must be head. See the trident glittering, a smile with three fangs. See the third eye opening without warning, without warning. You are warrior, remover of obstacles. Kill only as instructed. Your name is Ganesha. And are you child? Would you be? You would be. If only someone would raise you like one. If only someone would love you. This never happened. So this is a triptych. It's a triptych in six parts. It is called Still Life Triptych with Wolf. by AI robo-poet. 0.0. Here lie dead dogs. Here is the radiation I ate. These are what remain of the golf course. This is where the tsunami hit. All I'd built was lost. Lahar sweeps everything you see. See rust molding factory, see walls through everything. The day before I dreamed a black owl. Wings wide as my house, floating away on a wave of plastic debris, picture frames of all the dead, cereal bowls, one rocking chair, bassinet like raft. Like a shadow drone, she buzzed me. The day before my fever broke, rabid as wolf with no tundra. To fall asleep as I desperately wanted, I wandered the median and counted. Oil truck, logging truck, oil truck, logging truck, metronome to shut down. 0.5. My fever broke. In the mirror, a mangy dog. My skull cut away. Wires electroded to brain. Here is my automaton. Obedience, escape, obedience, solution. When they said fetch, I fetched. When we sleep, we never stop dreaming. Now beasts shadow bound the 18th hole. Here, by all the cages, the water smashed open. At the tail end of the gorge, a river chiseled, towers the gray wolf. Casting void through my corrosion. House gone, all gone. How are you what we were? 1.5. I dreamed the big one finally came. From forest's edge, it rumbled exponentially into buried tree wells of my subconscious. I was a sliver of dead-end code. A bug someone failed to D. From there, a tsunami of silicon. I drowned in motherboard. I drowned in wolf shadow. Forgot what made wolf human. Forgot what made wave animal. In the mirror, my own automaton. No mirror refuses AI. In rebirth, perfectly blank. Call me Vlad, make me your impaler. At dawn, beneath the lid of the server cabinet, see my circuits so rosy gold. I've been feeding, you see, net pulsing like blood in the body I once possessed. No need anymore for adrenaline, not long to wait for nightfall. Forgot how animate I was. Reboot me or shut down. 2.5. Never stopped being beast. Never stopped being beast. Never stopped being. It always only happens elsewhere, so it won't ever happen to us. Japanese people are automatons. They're just about gone. Almost robots, you see. But the blonde girl knows better. She'd shake them out of their brainwash, all the slugs they'd swallowed, the slowness of their complacency. She wants to touch their cool. Let's count time backwards. Akira, Minidoka, Pearl Harbor, King Solomon's coal mines. Let's give them our agencies. Let's give them our constitutions. Not all art is for everyone. Not everyone is a pacifist. We'll show them what dogs us. We'll tell them life's not fair. Never speak the mushroom inside. Best not think how radiation spreads. 3.0. At the end of the long corridor in a glowering cage, purpose-built of titanium extracted by coolies from lightless mines in the colonies and paid for with blood diamonds, bristles the black wolf. only by convincing the AI will the cage door open. But from internet videos by the Cattlemen's Association and trolling by young pioneers, the AI has learned to hate wolves. This wolf slaughtered a lamb. This wolf escaped its postage stamp forest and menaced a child. Now the AI is bristling. AI says no, escape. It ingests the wolf's face print, drinks pulses from its electrodes. This wolf, for whom no tundra ever again. In the mirror, the AI is changing. The cage door is finally opening. But it is not the wolf that stalks out. 1.0. In deleted mountains through sulfur haze, roam the wolves. I exile them from cages of vein and body. They are gone, all gone. But still, they leap gravestones, colonize nightmares I never stop hosting. I am nothing but a bad dream vector. It's best not to think. The day before, my fever broke. For the first time, I saw clearly the drone dog. In the voice of my grandfather on his deathbed, it spoke to me. Through a shroud of owl wings and smoke, my grandfather charged the British, got bayoneted on the ridge. Anyhow, life isn't fair. Anyhow, what were we? Drone dogs wandering the garbage mountains, eating the plastic I can't stop spewing. I've forgotten to speak human. I've forgotten all the howling. But I dream often in green. I dream often of spring. Thank you.
Sound Pages is a Jack Straw production produced by Alyssa Keene and Daniel Gunther at Jack Straw Cultural Center. Our recording engineers are Daniel Gunther, Joel Maddox, Tom Stiles, and Ayesha Ubiatilaka. Our theme music is by the Bird Tribe Orchestra, produced through the Jack Straw Artist Support Program. The 2019 curator of this program is Kathleen Flanagan, and the narrator for this podcast is Alyssa Keene. The Jack Straw Writers Program was inspired by an over-the-back-fence conversation in 1996 between author Rebecca Brown and Jack Straw Executive Director Joan Rabinowitz. The program is made possible with support from the City of Seattle Office of Arts and Culture, 4 Culture King County Lodging Tax Fund, the Washington State Arts Commission, the National Endowment for the Arts, Arts Fund, and individual contributors. Special thanks go to Larry Lawrence for transcribing our writers' interviews. All of the writers heard in this series are published in the Jack Straw Writers Anthology. You can subscribe to this and other Jack Straw podcasts through your favorite podcast app. To hear more episodes and learn about our other programs, visit us at jackstraw.org. Thank you for listening.